Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Today is a beginning of the retreat series Dharma Talk. There will be altogether 60 for a retreat period of 2 months. So we'll call this R series. Series R. Dhamma talk number 1. Okay. I believe all of you know how to practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation properly and correctly. So whenever we start a day or a meditation session or any Buddhist activities, we always start with the words, Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. In English is translated as homage to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. And after we pay the homage to the Buddha, and then we request, okay, the three refuges taking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And then after that, based on the condition of the day, whether it's a retreat or just a few hours, we take 5 precepts or 8 precepts or 9 precepts or 10 precepts. And then we carry on with our program. So we always say that those words in Pali. And I think it is important for us to understand properly and correctly with regard to these words. Namo, just say homage. Tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Homage to the Blessed One. The Enlightened One. And the fully enlightened one. That's English. So what does this namo means? Okay, we call homage. If you look at the whole actions, what is taking place in there is actually we are paying full respect and honoring the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. Okay, all the words, all the deeds represent that. There's a respect, there's an honor, there's a reverence in it. And that's what namo represents. We're paying, let's say, honor and respect to the Buddha. Okay? Namo tassa bhagavato. Tassa is loosely saying that. Bhagava. Bhagava is another word calling the Buddha. We call the Buddha, also we call Bhagava. Okay. So we are paying honor and respect to that Buddha. Okay, tassa bhagavato, to that Buddha, to that Bhagava. And we are paying respect and honor to that Buddha. Why? And in here, there are two words that follow. Arahato and Sammasambuddhassa. Basically, these are the two qualities of Buddha that most of us use quite often, all the time. Because these are the very important critical qualities to be in that state. Arahato is enlightened one. Enlightened ones mean one who has eliminated all the mental defilements, lobha, dosa, moha, greed, anger and delusion, eliminated, uprooted, totally extinguished. Okay. That's what it means by arahato, one who has fully eliminated, uprooted these three mental defilements. As one has totally eliminated these mental defilements, one is worthy of praise and respect and honor by the humans, by the devas, celestial beings, and the brahmas, the higher beings. Arahato, that's what it means. We pay respect, we honor to that Buddha, to that Bhagava, because he has eliminated all mental defilements. Because of that, all human devas and the brahmas, they are worthy of paying reverence and respect to them. That's arahato, the enlightened one. And the last word is sammasambuddhassa. In English translated as fully enlightened one. What is sammasambuddhassa? We always know sama. Sama means right, correct, rightly, correctly, truthfully, the truth. This Buddha has known all that needs to be known. Okay, all that needs to be known. There's no exception. He has known all that need to be known without any teacher. In other words, he self-practiced, self-experienced without anybody instruction. He has discovered the truth. All that to be known by himself. And all that to be known is, you might see nowadays there are two versions of it, how people believe or interpret. All that to be known. Buddhists know anything and everything, that is how to eliminate all physical and mental suffering and escape from the samsara. Okay. One group of people, especially some of the more of them Westerner belief. That's what Buddha knows. But in the Theravada Buddhist traditions, Buddhists know anything and everything, but not as a all-knowing being, automatically known. Okay. If there arises a problem, if there arises a question, if the situation arises that need to be solved, whatever that is, if the Buddha inclined his mind, he see everything with clarity as it really is. But he has to incline to that problem or situation It is not automatically known. So whatever it is, if he inclines it, he knows the answer. That is what it means by Sammasambuddhassa. Not only the totally escaping from the samsara and eliminating of physical and mental suffering, anything and everything, if the mind's inclined to it, he knows. And because if you look at the scriptures and things like that, there's a lot of things the Buddha explained, especially about the mind and the mental phenomenons, mental processes. These are exceptional things. Okay? No ordinary person, even persons with the highest jhanic attainment, could not and would not know. And there's a lot of what we call now the miracles and psychic power and things like that. These are all, you don't have to be even a Buddha. Just by attaining the fourth jhana, fifth jhana, eighth jhana, ninth jhana, you can get through to this thing. And that is not just monopolized by Buddha. So for that reason, as in Asia, traditional Buddhist belief, whatever Buddhists would like to know, if he inclined his mind towards that, he knows the answer. That's what it means by Sammasambuddhassa. He knows it without any teacher, without anybody teaching. So that is what means whenever we say Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. So that's a fundamental thing that we need to know as a Buddhist. And after we pay that homage or pay respect and honor, what do we do? Okay. In a Buddhist, one of the things the Buddha said is, you don't trust down other people's throat what you believe, what your ideas are. Okay. In other words, you don't force upon anybody. And how can we define that forcing upon anybody? It's a very simple thing, he said. Anybody approaches you who wants to know, who wants to understand, asks you to explain or to discuss or to have a dialogue with. If that person come and engage and ask you, then you may answer. If not, you don't just simply go out and talk to, take a podium and then scream out and tell all your ideas and try to convert. So that's how the rule is set for the monks. In other words, no forced conversion. You only talk to people who wants to know, who wants to understand, who are curious. Only then you may say. So to be able to conform with that through the tradition, they created this requesting of the three refuge and the precept. So even in a normal situation, even among the Buddhists, the tradition is set in such a way that one request, okay, Ahambande, Venerable Sir, Tisarena Saha, that is the three jewels, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, Pincha Silan, along with it, five precepts, or eight precepts, or nine precepts. Dhammanya Jami, Anugahang Gatwa Silande Thamme Bande. I request to give it to me, to dispense to me. Grant me these three jewels and the precepts. So, in other words, that set the setting of somebody is approaching with true sincerity, want to know, want to learn, want to explore, want to investigate. So, by saying that, the monk is totally free from his breaking his vinaya. He's not forcing upon anybody. For that reason, that freeze come in. And then after you have requested, then we just pay homage. And the monk said, or whoever that is said, Ya Mahamandami Dhamvarita, repeat after me. And then whoever is asking, say, Ama Bande. That's all right, sir. I agree. Right. Okay. It's Ama Bande. Venerable sir. That's right. And then you pay respect to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha by saying that phrase, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa, three times. And three times is, we show the seriousness. That's number one. Okay, you just ask only once, and if you just ask three times, okay, give me that pen, and then say, give me that pen again, and then say, give me that pen. If you ask three times, that person really wants it. If he asks only once, maybe, maybe not, he can live without it. So that is the idea, three times, seriousness showing it. Not only that, by repetition, if you are repeating the same thing again and again and again, eventually it becomes a part of you. It's in your memory bank. Okay. At first you have to look at the paper and look at it, and later you just can say, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. And one thing have to be careful is, once you know it, make sure that you are not repeating like a parrot. You know the meaning what we just said. While you are saying it, also the meaning is in there, in your mind, in your heart. That way one should perform. And then, Buddham Saranam Gicchami. Okay, Buddham Saranam Gicchami. Most of the time it said, I go to the Buddha for refuge, I go to the Dharma for refuge, I go to the Sangha for refuge. That is the way it is, Lucy said. What is Buddham Charanam Gicchami? A little bit like deeper meaning that I go to the Buddha for refuge or as a refuge. So Saranam Gicchami. Buddham is Buddha, the Buddha. What is Saranam Gicchami is, okay, I have full confidence in the Buddha. I have faith in the Buddha, faith and confidence, Saddha. Okay, and I have respect to the Buddha, and I have reverence to the Buddha. Okay. In other words, with faith, with saddha, with reverence and with respect, I approach the Buddha to depend upon him so that he could guide and show me the way to liberation. So that is what it means, Buddham Saranam Gicchami. With full confidence, reverence, and respect, I depend on the Buddha to guide me, to teach me the way to liberation from suffering. That's what it means, Saranam Gicchami, and then Dhammam Saranam Gicchami. So in here, don't personalize it. Don't look at it as a person, a Buddha. Okay, or Buddha, like a person. It is the quality of the Buddha you're referring to. The second one is Dhammam Saranam Gicchami. Dhammam is all the guidance and teaching that the Buddha has left us, Dhamma. Do that, in that I have full confidence. And with respect and reverence, I depend, I lean on the Dharma to show me the roadmap, to show me the way for the liberation from suffering. And then the same thing, Sangham. Sangham means bhikkhu, okay? Let's simply say monks. the monks are, of course nowadays, there are monks and monks and monks. Just like people have good people and bad people, monks have also bad monks and good monks. Nowadays you will see an internet, even from Burma coming, the monks screaming and yelling and, okay, this is my phrase, okay. Beat these infidel or this or that, that they are not in accordance with different religion, or kill this Rohingyas and so on and so on. These actions are totally opposite to what the Buddhists have taught. So they are monks. They are by appearance. They shave their head, put their yellow robe on. Some people are not even really monks. They just take it and then they use their cause with the backing of that image. So that's not a true monk. And at the same time, there are many good monks. So one must, okay, and here is responsibly falls upon you, one must look for a good monk, a good bhikkhu, a good teacher, okay, who can walk the talks. You teach and also live. One must look at it. And that kind of a monk, so don't just go there and everybody with a shaven head and a saffron robe, don't follow them blindly. Okay, do your research, investigate, explore. And especially if you stay together for a longer period of time, you can't hide. For a moment, for a day, for a few days, they might be able to pretend. But if you approach them for a longer period, you will see every little movements, manners, behaviors, and actions. You can figure out very easily, that is Sangam Saranam Gacchami. So that is what it means by taking refuge. Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dhamman Saranam Gacchami, Sangam Saranam Gacchami. That is taking refuge. And precepts, I don't need to go to details. You all know 5 precepts, 8 precepts, 9 precepts, 10 precepts. And then that's it. Basically, you oriented yourself. Okay. You oriented yourself to do something. That's it. In other words, you connected with this Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and their basic discipline, morality, and you grounded yourself. Now, why do you do that? Why did you ground it yourself? You grounded yourself. What is the purpose? The purpose is to be liberated from suffering. To be liberated from the realms of birth and death and birth and death. That is the big goal, of course. So, to achieve the big goal, you must do something. In Buddhism, you can't get anything without your own effort, without your own doing. Nobody can grant you it. Nobody can give you enlightenment. Nobody can save you from any form of suffering. Only you can do it. Okay. Nobody can grant it. They might temporarily influence a certain situation, but no, the rest is all back to you. So you grounded and you oriented yourself in that setting to practice so that you can be liberated. You can be free for that reason. That means you are practicing now, the practice. And what is the practice? The main principle that the Buddhists taught us that from the total liberation is mindfulness and sight. Okay? Satipatthana Vipassana. You have to do the practice vipassana using mindfulness as a stool. Whether you do the pure vipassana or whether you are doing the mixed vipassana, samatha and vipassana mix, doesn't matter. You must practice. See, that is, once you ground it, you are grounded to do that, you practice. So you practice this. Why do you practice? You can say, to attain Nibbana. Right, that is right. Okay, you practice to attain Nibbana. Or you can say, I practice to become enlightened. Oh, great, that's good too. Or you can say, I practice so that I can eliminate all the physical suffering and mental suffering. That's also right. All these things are right, see. I practice for Nibbana, I practice for enlightenment, I practice to get rid of all the suffering. Okay. You can use all these things. But still, these are, to me, still quite unwavering statements. Nibbana, even discussion about Nibbana, you will go spinning down and nobody can really nail it. Okay, enlightened. What is enlightenment? There will be a big debate can go through. Or eliminate physical and mental suffering. That's a little bit more narrower and more focused. But still, starting to think, how can you eliminate this physical suffering? I have a sciatic pain. I have a gas attack. How it is. All these things can come in. So, I would like to approach this. I practice to dry it up, to reduce and to dry it up kilesa, mental defilement. That would be the definition I use. They are all right, nothing is wrong. But I like to go straight to the thing that we can really touch, know, and do something about it. I'm practicing to reduce and to dry up the mental defilements. What are the mental defilements? Lobha, dosa, moha. Okay? Greed, anger, and delusion. I won't go into details. You know the more detailed meaning of it. That's what you are practicing for. To reduce, to dry it up, and finally to totally uproot it, these mental defilements. That's the purpose. So this drying up of mental defilements, this uprooting mental defilements, everybody is doing it. When you become an arahat, okay, at the same time, arahat do, you remember? The Buddha's one of the Buddha's quality. That doesn't only, it's only for the Buddha. It's for anybody who totally uprooted mental defilements called arahat. It can be a full Buddha, or it can be a silenced Buddha, or it can be a rahan or arahat. They all. And also, there are many people who are along the way of reducing and drying up to a certain degree. So for that reason, we are practicing to reduce and dry up the mental defilements. Why? Why do we do that? Because this mental defilements, kilesa, has a direct correlation to what? Direct correlation to tension, stress, and suffering. Tension, stress, and suffering. The more mental defilements, the more greed, the more attachment, the more anger, hatred, the more deluded, the more tension you will have, the more stress you will have. You will be stressed out. It will spin down, and some people, due to the stress, they even suicide and all form of suffering. So there's a direct correlation between these two. So if you can reduce the mental defilements, you will be also reducing all sort of tensions, all sort of stress, and all sort of suffering from your life. For that reason, we are practicing. Okay. Mental defilement dried up, reduced, because our stress, our tension, and our suffering, our despair, our sorrow, also reduce. And if you can totally eliminate the mental defilements, all stress, all tension, all suffering are gone. That is a direct relationship. As such, one should know with clarity, because you are practicing it, and you should know with precision what you are doing, how you are doing, and why you are doing. Buddhism is all about understanding. Understanding, we call it piññā, understanding. Understanding on an intellectual level, understanding on a little higher level, deeper level, understanding on a complete, ultimate level, many level of understanding. When you go to the ultimate understanding, that's called wisdom. Okay, but the word is in Pali is one, piññā. It applies to every stages. So that is the reason we are practicing. And once you reduced it, you are stress-free, tension-free, and suffering-free. Okay. And somebody might say, yeah, that sounds good. Some people will come point, you're very selfish, you're only doing for yourself. You live in the midst of the society, in this human race. You are just trying to escape. Selfish person. One will point finger at you. And if you only look only on that spot, yeah, that accusation is quite true. But just look at it a little beyond that. What it is when you have eliminated mental defilements, no lobha, no dosa, no moha, but still you are a human being and you live in the human society. You have neighbor, you have people you are interrelated with. Okay? So first and foremost, what happened was you are not contributing any greed, grasping, holding, anger, hatred, attachment, and no delusion, which means you see things as it should be, as it really is. So in other words, you are not contributing any stressful, any suffering, any hurtful producing elements into the society. See, it is not only you who benefited, it is your neighborhood, the people you are associated with, they also benefit because you are not contributing anything. Because just look at it every day, all of us are in some way or the other contributing some form of tension and stress and suffering for others from a wrong speech, a wrong deed, from a wrong behavior. Because that person is not have the right view with you, not in accordance with your idea or opinion, conflict. But you take it out. So you are somewhat contributing to the society in an indirect sense, because you are not pouring any more toxin into the human society. That is the first way you contribute it. Secondly, when you can live without this mental defilements, the way you do, the way you speak is entirely different from the rest of the people around you, from your neighborhood. So automatically you become a model. You are teaching them, but not with words, not with telling them what to do, just by being you. Just by being you with no kilesa, no mental defilements. And you'll be surprised how much we human learns. Okay, we think we learn a lot from books and listening to lectures and stuff. But most of the thing we are doing, we learn from watching things. Since we were little baby, little kid, they learn and they learn and they learn. Good or bad, doesn't matter. By watching, by emulating, by copying, by duplicating, by watching, hearing. That is a very powerful tool we are not even aware of. We think only when we say this is right, this is wrong, and then we put a flag around, then we are doing something. No. Just by being present, just by being you in your neighborhood, in the people around you, you are making a difference. You are creating more peace and more prosperity in a wholesome way. People, they just watch, and it somehow rubs. Conditioning process. That's how one is contributing. So you are not selfish. You are not only doing for yourself, you are contributing in many different ways. And then, not everybody, there are some people. Some people is, they go beyond that. They decide, what I have learned, what I have known, I'm going to make it a cause. I'm going to make that, what I know as a cause, and distribute as much as I could as the main purpose of my life for others who wants to know, who wants to learn, who are curious. They go on farther. There is a contribution to the society. There are quite a number of people, they take on that cause. And among them too, some are very special, very charismatic. In other words, they become popular, followed by the mass. And they also contribute a lot to the mass. So don't think that you are a selfish little guy who is practicing only for yourself to escape from these rounds of suffering. There are ways and means that you don't even think it is still contributing to society. As such, one should understand. Understanding is important. And when you understand that way, you know how important you are in this middle of this human society. Everything you do, you say, you think, you move is affecting, influencing, conditioning the surrounding. And if you can move all these things without mental defilements, that's the most beautiful, effective way of moving in the society. As such, we should understand about our practice. So, that's why we practice, and that is our goal. The goal is, don't make it too big. I'm waving very specific to dry up mental defilements. Why? To reduce stress or to eliminate stress and suffering. And then, as you live in the midst of this human society, your actions vibrate and affect others. We are interdependent in a way that we don't even fully fathom. And if you understand that way, you have a good and right attitude about what Buddhism in general is, and then what you're doing, how you're doing, and why you are doing, and what kind of effects you have on the society, whether as a good person or bad person. That will be a snapshot of the Buddhism and what we are doing, the practice that we are doing. Must understand with clarity, with precision. And if you understand that way, you have a very correct attitude of the path that you are going, and you will have even higher motivation on what you are doing. So this kind of understanding, okay, must practice. Because to practice so that you truly understand the ultimate reality or the true nature of what? Of yourself, that's all. So to expand it, to understand yourself means to understand your mind and the body, nama and rupa. And how one must understand this nama and rupa. Okay, we'll put the answer in the front. The answer is this nama and rupa, this mind and body, this me, is nothing but is always in a state of change, constant flux, impermanence. This nama and rupa, the mind and body, this me is always under the oppression of the state of change. But if you live under an oppressed government, what? You suffer. The same thing if you are living under the oppression of this state of change, you are suffering. That is dukkha, anicca dukkha. And then this state of change and this suffering, they unfold on its own. There is nothing you can do. They come when the condition arises, they disappear when the condition arises. Condition controls it. You can't control it. You can't change it. Anicca dukkha anatta. So to understand this anicca dukkha anatta of the mind and matter, in other words, about yourself in that context, is called enlightenment. When you understand as such, you become enlightened. In other words, you must understand any ultimate reality, not what is apparent reality. In an apparent, ultimate reality, anicca, dukkha, anatta, about nama and rupa, mind and matter. For that reason, we are practicing. And in that way, only you can truly understand ultimate reality with the three characteristics. Anicca, dukkha, anatta. This understanding cannot be attained or achieved by reading, by learning, by listening, by attending lectures, by philosophizing, by analyzing, by logic. Whatever you do with your intelligent mind, you cannot understand it fully and completely. Maybe some sharp, very sharp, bright, intelligent people might dig quite deep, but not truly. So that is one thing we should understand about this practice too. And this Buddhism cannot be totally understood through learning, reading, listening, philosophizing, logic, analytical power. It must be experiential, direct learning. And That direct learning is the one that Buddha set out for us, the part of the roadmap. Only through the direct learning, one can truly understand the true nature of mind and matter, the true nature of self. Myself, yourself, ourself. That is how this system works. But this discussion, this listening, this here, Dharma talk, listening to talk, okay, they cannot give you true wisdom, but these in conjunction together with your practice, this Dharma talk can reinforce you, the practice, reinforce you on your experience, explain you, thread the needle. That is what the Dharma talks are about. Dharma talk is to reinforce your experience and your practice, to clarify, okay, exactly what your experiences are. In that way, it is very useful, but it must be woven through the practice. And only the theoretical part, which are directly related, and maybe a little bit indirectly related to the actual practice and experience. That's how one can grow. That is the way to march upon on this practice. And of course, we are practicing first and foremost what? To dry up the mental defilement. When the mental defilements are gone, what happened? Suffering ceases to exist. There's no more suffering. When there's no more suffering, what happened? At that moment, you are called enlightened. What is enlightened? Enlightenment is you understand the Four Noble Truth. Four Noble Truth. And when you understand experientially in conjunction with reinforcements of lectures and books and talks, okay, got enlightened and you experience Nibbana. Same thing, dried up the mental defilement, Nibbana, same thing. But if we say simply for Nibbana, it doesn't sink into you. But if you say to dry up the mental defilement so that I can reduce stress and tension in my life, that is effective because it is right in the midst of things. It touches you. As such, one should look. So, Four Noble Truth. When you understand Four Noble Truth completely experientially, you are enlightened and you experience or know what Nibbana is. Cessation of all form of suffering. But we are not there. We are not even at the doorstep yet. We are trotting away. So in this Four Noble Truth, the first two truth, suffering, dukkha, sissa, okay, the noble soup of suffering, and then the noble truth of the cause of suffering, samudaya, sissa, dukkha, sissa, and samudaya, sissa. These two are called Lokiya Sissa, the truth of the mundane world, the world we live in, the world of Nama and Rupa, the world of the five aggregates, the world of mind and matter. These two truths can be found, discovered, because it exists in our mundane world. So these two truths you can accurately understand, practice, experience, abandon, uproot with what we have right now, whatever we have. What is it? What we have is mind and matter, nama and rupa. What we have, this mind and matter, in a little more detail, is called five aggregates. What are they? this physical aspect, the body. And then vedana, feeling, and then perception, sanya, and then mental formation, sankhara, and then vijnana. It's the consciousness. That five. All that five. And that five is in you, in me, in every one of us. Every one of us have it. So we can accurately work on those five. And in these five, you will find this, the first noble truth, dukkha sissa. And you will find the second noble truth, samudaya sissa. But there are another two truths. Okay. Nirodha sissa, the cessation of all form of suffering. And megha sissa, the path, the truth of the noble path. Those two are not in this mundane world. Those two truths are in the ultra-mundane world. In Pali, it's called Lokottara. Okay? Ultra-mundane truth. Or Lokottara Sissa. So in this ultra-mundane, what is ultra-mundane? Ultra-mundane is beyond this nama and rupa. You cannot find this, the third noble truth in this mind and matter or the five aggregates. You cannot find the mega sissa, the total 100% truth of the path in this mind and matter. So you cannot find, you cannot experience, you cannot practice, you cannot do anything with this mind and matter. You cannot investigate. And you practice, and you practice, and you practice. You practice to the point of you pass the threshold. That threshold is defined with, directly with the drying up of the mental defilements. And only in the ultra-mundane world, when you pass that threshold, that doesn't mean you have to die. This doesn't mean that you have to give up this body and this mind. But the condition change. Change of condition is this mind and body does not have kilesa, mental defilement. At that moment, only then, you will truly understand what is nibbana means and what is the true path, megha means. Because megha sissa, the truth of the path, that megha sissa, the truth of the path, or that mega binya, wisdom, the wisdom of the path, that is the one that destroy ignorance. When the ignorance is gone, no more mental defilements, no more mental defilements, no more suffering. No more suffering is also called enlightenment. In other words, you understand in this very life what nibbana is. So that will give you a full-rounded understanding of, number one, what Buddhism is, what Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is, why we take refuge, and why we practice. And in the practice, there are two binya, or understanding, intellectual understanding, okay, theoretical understanding, and experiential understanding. Through that experiential understanding, eventually you will understand this full noble truth. And that means that is the end of your journey. You have totally eliminated all form of suffering, physical and mental. So may all of you be able to practice this full foundation of mindfulness as the Buddha has set down for us. And may you be able to understand this Four Noble Truth experientially as soon as possible. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham bhujemi. Dhammam bhujemi. Sangam bhujemi. Thank you very much.